Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Eli, hour three. Let's go! Welcome in to hour three of four. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 10 o'clock tonight, a full boat show. We have a lot going on tonight's show, and I figured out a way, at least for a little while, as long as my makeshift propping up of my camera works. We are live on Instagram right now, at Lawrence W. Holmes, if you'd like to take a look inside the studio while we have our next conversation. This segment being brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep. Get heavenly sleep with a new Tomorrow hybrid mattress, bedding, and more. Comfort designed by Serta Simmons Sleep Experts. Use code DRIVE2 for $200 off when you spend $500 or more. I love talking football with really smart dudes. Dan Durkin is one of the really smart dudes that I love talking football with. He has been doing incredible film breakdowns, whether it's on the Bears' new free agents or possible draft picks, like Quentin Nelson, for example. On The Athletic, that's where you can see his work. TheAthletic.com, I have a subscription. You should have one. I check out The Athletic every morning. It's great stuff, and it's in-depth work. That's why I love bringing Dan on the show. You can follow him on Twitter, at DJ Durkin. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm well, and yourself, Lawrence?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited to... I'm kind of there now. You know, yeah. I sometimes feel like it... We probably jumped the gun in discussing the draft, but I do feel like I'm finally there.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I know you're in Arizona, you know, kind of like a sojourner like myself as well. So I think that every year I typically head there for, you know, like the end of March, you know, kind of like the end of spring when we're tired of cold weather here. And like that to me, like flips the switch in my head, like, man, football season is so close and the draft season is in full swing. I mean, 2 weeks from, you know, not too far from right now, Ryan Pace can be making a huge decision for the Bears.
Well, I do want to talk draft with you, but I first wanted to pick your brain about what happened yesterday with the Bears declining to match the offer that Cam Meredith got. It was interesting because I got more feedback on that story yesterday than I was expecting to get. First things first, going back to his 2016 tape, what type of player was he?
He was excellent. I mean, I thought that last year he was going to be in position to really, you know, establish himself as, you know, a legitimate, you know, maybe consistent 800s, you know, yard receiver in the NFL. The thing that really I liked watching in his film was his ability to win both inside and out. I thought he really matured as a route runner, setting up defenders, excellent body control, high pointing the football. So, you know, for an undrafted player out of Illinois State, I thought that he had really developed very quickly, especially for somebody that switched positions in college. I think his quarterbacking background definitely benefits him in terms of reading coverages and understanding what the quarterback is seeing and how to make those, you know, in-route coverage adjustments and you know, inside adjustments based on what he's seeing. But, you know, obviously the injury was devastating, you know, tearing ACL and an MCL. It was gruesome. I mean, you knew it was bad the second that it happened, which was really unfortunate. So I think that, you know, missing out on that extra year, you really only have 1 year to go by to say that, yes, you know, he's somebody that you could have potentially wanted to develop in your system. This is a situation where I think that I'm not sure if I want to say that Ryan Pace, you know, guessed wrong here, because really when you look at how it all broke down, I guess for $1 million more, he could have eliminated any possibility of a team coming in and making an offer to Cam Meredith, because no team is going to part with a second round pick to get him. But really, when I looked at the structure of the deal, it kind of made sense. I'm like, okay, so instead of getting him for 1 year at 2.9, you can get him at 2 years for 5.4. So that's 2.7. So that kind of made sense to me. So I was somewhat surprised that they didn't match. But obviously, we don't have the same amount of data that they have. We don't know where he is at in his rehabilitation. We don't know what the MRI show as far as structurally how he looks. But I think they may have let a player worth developing get away.
I also think that there has to be some element of looking at your receiving core and saying, well, we spent a lot of money on Allen Robinson. We're still not quite sure if he's going to be ready. We know that Kevin White has struggled with injuries. Do we really want to have three guys that have injury concerns as our top three receivers?
No, I totally agree. And I mean, in essence, they've created a need. And this is a team that didn't need to create more needs when you think about where they're at. As far as how the talent is on this team, or where the talent isn't on this team, is probably a better way of putting it. So I do agree that it's kind of curious to create a new need on a team that already has plenty, heading into the draft. But maybe it was a situation where they didn't want three guys that they weren't quite sure where they're at health wise. Maybe it's a situation where maybe Matt Nagy's got a guy in mind that he likes in the mid rounds. I think that this is a pretty deep draft when you look at the receiver class. I think that there's going to be the potential for some really excellent receivers to be on the board when the Bears are back on the board in the second round. Maybe if they were to trade back and, in that third round area as well, I think rounds 2, 3, and 4, there should be some very productive receivers that come off. And, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt when you look and see what the Chiefs were able to do with a guy like Kareem Hunt. So, I mean, clearly he understands how to identify mid-round talent that can come in as a rookie and contribute. So perhaps this is a situation where they want to truly get somebody that he likes the profile of physically, he likes the makeup of as far as where they're at with their football intelligence, and then he can bring along in his system. So maybe they're looking for a younger guy that they can develop that Matt's signing off on. So I think there's a lot of factors that people don't quite know as far as what happened behind the scenes that led to this decision, both from a health perspective and also from just what the new coaching staff thought of him. But I think that people need to kind of be realistic and be a little objective about it. This is a guy who really only produced for 1 year. Would it have been nice to have him and a homegrown guy that you identified develop for your team? Definitely. But you need to give this team the benefit of the doubt because the offseason isn't over yet.
We're talking with Dan Durkin, who does incredible film work for The Athletic. Get your subscription for The Athletic and check out what he's doing. From the film work that you've already been doing on Matt Nagy and trying to blend some of the stuff from Philadelphia along with Kansas City, what type of receiver makes sense for a Matt Nagy system?
Yeah, I think that in his system, obviously, route running is very essential just in terms of he demands a lot in terms of adjustments, like in route adjustments that are made, or conversions is what they call it. So your route converts from X to Y based on whatever coverage it is that you see. So you need people who, number one, can read coverage when they're already off their break, can adjust their routes, can get into their break and out of their break and into the open area and be on the same page as their quarterback. So definitely route running is a very important skill when you're talking about the profile of player that it is that you're looking for. But speed is a big component. When you really look at what the Chiefs had, they didn't have a lot of size in their receiving core. Tyreek Hill, Albert Wilson, smaller guys that really aren't, go up and get it guys, but their speed is what allowed them to get free in the way that he would isolate them against linebackers, against slots, and give them option routes and give them mesh routes to pry them open over the middle of the field. So definitely the ability to read coverage, quickness, speed, all of those things are really essential traits when you go back and look at his film. And I think that Allen Robinson, what stood out to me, is a premier route runner. He's a guy that can truly put stress on the defense over the top. He can go up and get a ball in a contested situation. Taylor Gabriel can fly. I think he's very similar to what Tyreek Hill can do in terms of his ability to threaten the defense very quickly, make safeties play deeper off the line of scrimmage. And now they have some more dynamic tight ends as well. So the receiver position to me really, it comes down to football intelligence and then just like that, the short area, change of direction ability, and then some deep speed.
Dan, can you walk me through a route where a receiver has to make some decisions and where it's beneficial to have a guy who understands the offense very well?
Sure. So, I mean, just think about this. Like, one of the initial reads that a receiver would make as they're heading to their outlet, let's say it's like the number two receiver. So not the receiver closest to the line of scrimmage. They would be the number one. Maybe you have a number two receiver who is set to run something. Maybe it's just something straight up the seam, like a vertical route up the seam. What he's going to look for is the middle of the field open, meaning is it split safeties? Are there two safeties, or is the middle of the field closed? If the middle of the field is open, obviously you're not going to continue running up to where one of those deep safeties are. You're going to break your route. You're going to convert your route into something either a dig, so where the middle of the field is open now, or you're going to maybe hit a post. You're going to find that open area in it. So that's a situation where he needs to quickly identify, who am I looking for in coverage? Typically, it's the safeties that they look for because they're the best indicators of what a team is actually running from a coverage perspective. And then how am I going to adjust my route based on it being cover two or cover four in that situation? So am I going to break this off to a dig? Am I going to break this off to a post? Am I just going to hook it up and run a comeback or a curl to the quarterback? So those are the examples of what a receiver might do based on what he sees immediately from the safety. Middle of the field open, I'm going to convert my route over the middle. Is the middle of the field closed? That's fine. I'm going to stay on my initial route, and I'm going to hit this thing vertically and put some stress on that deep safety and the cornerback to that side of the field.
Let's get to the film that you did on Quentin Nelson. I was reading on The Athletic today. Initially, when you started to look at some of the mock drafts, it's like, well, you're starting to see Quentin Nelson pop up at number two at the Giants. And now it seems like maybe there'll be a run on quarterbacks, maybe even one through four, which I think puts the Bears back in the mix to get Quentin Nelson. I have heard people talk about him being the most safe pick in this draft because he could play the position at a Pro Bowl or maybe even an All-Pro level for a decade. What did your film show you?
Completely echoing what you just said. I think he, along with, I put him second on my board behind Saquon Barkley, just in terms of something. You know, Saquon Barkley, I think, is a potential, like, you know, cornerstone piece of your offense, and a guy who's never going to come off the field and going to contribute both in the run and the passing game. But Quentin Nelson is just one of the most technically sound run blockers that I've seen in quite some time. You think about historically since 2000, there have been only three guards that have been taken in the top 10. So Brandon Scherff, Chance Warmack, and then the kid from North Carolina, I'm blanking on his name right now, Jonathan Cooper. So those are the only three. So history kind of goes against this happening, seeing how infrequently it's happened. But this to me is, he's going to be the fourth. He'll be the fourth guard taken in the top 10, potentially even higher than, I don't think he would get past the Bears at eight. Immediately would step in as just a road grader from a run blocking perspective. His ability to pull, his ability to lead, his ability to pin, his ability to combo block, just really stout, physically aggressive. He's just got this really nasty demeanor. I thought he had some great quotes when I talked to him at the combine, just talking about wanting to take to basically eliminate his opponent's will to play the game on a snap by snap basis. And it shows up on his film. He always finishes his blocks. He's always taking guys, 6 to 8 yards away from the ball, redirecting them against their will. Those are the things that you look for. I think that technically he has a little bit of work to do as far as how he keeps his elbows. He has a tendency to flare his elbows up both as a run blocker, which negates some of his strength, and the same thing, he can grab a little bit as a pass blocker as well. He's cognizant of that. He talked about that as being one of the areas that he needs to work on. But when you talk about a plug and play and a safe pick, which Ryan Pace kind of needs when you look back at his draft at this point in time, to me that would be a no-brainer pick at a position of need for the Bears.
When I look at his measurables, is it crazy to think that somebody might look at him and say he plays tackle for me instead of guard?
I think that would be like in an extreme emergency situation that he would play tackle. I think that he's going to be locked in as a guard from day one, and I think he's going to be a really good guard at that. But no, I do understand what you're saying when you're talking about like the physical dimensions. 6'5", 329 pounds, 33¾-inch arms. Those are tackle dimensions in some ways when you think about it, as far as his length is concerned, his frame, the way he carries his weight. He's built, he carries his weight very well. He doesn't look, like heavy in certain areas. Just a very stout, powerful build. So I can understand physically how that profile would work, but I think this is a guy that you would have to be able to play both guard positions, probably going to play left since that's what he's played to this point. Maybe he could play center for you in a pinch, but truly like a Zach Martin type clone in terms of his ability to just get in and play. I mean, some of the things maybe think of like back to like Larry Allen back when he was with the Cowboys, just really, really, just taking people out of the pitcher at the line of scrimmage or getting to the second level and burying linebackers or burying cornerbacks that are trying to come up and force a play. So just his film, it was very difficult for me to pare down which ones I wanted to show because it was just so routine. He was so consistent with how he was able to pivot and lead and get just create huge holes. So I think that Harry Hiestand knows him very well. He'd love the opportunity to work for him. I think that if the quarterbacks do go 1, 2, 3, 4, then he could be in the mix. However, I think teams like the Colts and the Bucks may also be very interested in Quentin Nelson.
The Colts definitely need him with the way that they have not been able to protect Andrew Luck over the last 5 years.
Definitely.
Harry Hiestand is known around the league as someone that can really coach offensive line. When I was covering the Bears, he was there as their offensive line coach. What does he teach that makes his disciples so fervent in their support of him?
You know, the way that Quentin described it to us, he was just basically saying that like his passion was just so clear that he was a guy that never said no. If somebody wanted to stay after and watch film, if somebody wanted to stay after and work on some technique, that, you know, Coach Hiestand never said no. It basically came down to two things that mattered to him: coaching offensive line and his family. Like that is his life. This is his passion. I think that I had a guy reach out to me on Twitter. I think he did some video for Notre Dame, and he said that, you know, Coach Hiestand wouldn't let any cameras, both still or video, ever be near his linemen because he didn't want them to see like his secret sauce and like all those types of things. So he's very protective of like how he communicates and what he communicates to his players. But clearly, when you think about how many effective players you've seen come from Notre Dame since he took over there, you're talking about several first and second round picks that aren't just getting picked in that because, you know, like people think they're good. They have actually lived up to that draft status. So I think that clearly he knows how to, one, identify talent because he was able to recruit and bring in players that fit his system. And then obviously he was able to develop them into, you know, some of the best offensive linemen in the league. So I think that his ability to really just kind of lock in on fundamentals and really that's the thing that stood out to me was Nelson's footwork was just impeccable on every play. The way that he would, you know, have his drop step right to drop his, you know, to drop his abdomen and to drop his back and get underneath, get his center of gravity low and right before he would actually strike from the ground up. I mean, everything was just always in sync with these guys when it actually came to making that contact with the defensive, you know, whether it's a defensive lineman or a linebacker. So to me, that's somebody who reps these guys very well and makes them understand fundamentally what they need to do to get themselves in the best position to redirect somebody at the point of attack.
I've got a few more minutes with Dan Durkin of The Athletic. Check him out on Twitter, at DJ Durkin. We were talking about the wide receivers. The Bears are clearly in a place now where they're going to have to draft at least one wide receiver. Who makes the most sense for them when you're looking at the tape of the possibles?
DJ Moore, Christian Kirk, those are the guys that I really have kind of identified as like I could really see those two flourishing in Matt Nagy's system. Just two stout, powerful, willing to work over the middle of the field. Very much I see a lot of like Golden Tate and Steve Smith, and both of them, both physically and just how they're willing to work over the middle of the field, how they're able to separate, how precise they are with their route running. And they both have speed to take like a now route or a bubble route and take it to the house. So those two, to me, potentially in the second round, make a ton of sense in terms of the profile and just how they would immediately step in and I think have a huge impact on whichever team drafts them.
What do you think the Bears end up doing at 8, or do you see them staying at 8?
So I think that I honestly do think the quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4. I think that the Jets kind of tipped to the rest of the league. We're going to take a quarterback. So now another team that may have a quarterback in their sights is going to have to leapfrog them at 2. So you could very well see, I can see a scenario where it goes Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, and then Josh Allen, like 1, 2, 3, 4, just like that. And then all of a sudden you've got like Saquon Barkley, Bradley Chubb, you know, like those guys are coming up. So I think that if Nelson is there, I think to me that that's the easy pick. But I think really this is going to come down to a defensive player for the Bears. Ideally, they would get an edge rusher. I think that's where they're the most deficient at this point in time. I'm not quite sure if anybody other than Bradley Chubb would be, you know, worthy of the 8th pick. And you're talking about guys like, you know, like Marcus Davenport or Harold Landry, something like that. The possibility of them taking somebody like Denzel Ward, the cornerback out of Ohio State, I think is very real. But then I think that there's two very intriguing linebackers, and Tremaine Edmonds, the guy that I looked at today from Virginia Tech, physically looks like Brian Urlacher. He's only 19 years old. He's going to be 20 in a month. So you're talking about a guy you could have contract control with through the time that he's 25 before he signs his second deal. Just unlimited upside, but you know he's very raw at the same time. And then Roquan Smith from Georgia. So I think that they're in a position to really get a true impact player on defense. I'm a little iffy about some of the edge rushers this year, but I think that if Nelson isn't there, I think that they'll be in a chance to add somebody immediately who can step in on their defense and be a starter.
When I saw you post about the linebacker, I immediately went to Amobi Okoye, and I was like, mm-hmm. Was that the last guy who got drafted at like 19?
Right.
I just looked him up. He's still only 30 years old.
Yeah, that's nuts, right? I mean, 2007 he was drafted. No, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So, yeah, I mean, Tremaine Edmonds, so his dad was an all-pro tight end with the Dolphins, Pharrell. His older brother Trey is a running back with the Saints. His brother Terrell will be drafted this year. He's a safety from Virginia Tech who played behind him. This kid is 6'4.5", 253 pounds, 34.5-inch arms. I mean, he moves just so effortlessly. The thing I think that separates him to me is Virginia Tech plays a 4-2-5 hybrid defense. So they play two inside linebackers. So he immediately fits to me a 3-4 inside linebacker scheme very well. His ability to cover is really what stands out to me. And I think that, you know, when you have somebody that you trust to cover, you know, people out of the slot or a tight end up the seam, I mean, they had him literally covering slot receivers throughout the season, much like the Bears have done with Leonard Floyd in the past. So that just gives you so much flexibility with what you do with the rest of your defensive front, how you use your safety. So I think that he, to me, makes a lot of sense. But again, it's a gamble. But I mean, he's of that athletic profile that you've seen Ryan Pace go after, and a guy like Kevin White, and a guy like Leonard Floyd. So I think that if Nelson's not there, the Bears have a chance to really hit on one of these defensive players.
Dan, as always, I really appreciate the work you do. It's incredible stuff, and I thank you for coming on the show. I'm looking forward to seeing, as we get even closer to the draft, the stuff that you're going to do on The Athletic.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Lawrence. You can reach out anytime, man.
That's Dan Durkin of The Athletic. I like him very much. At DJ Durkin is where you can find him on Twitter. For all the people that are watching on Instagram, I appreciate you watching and checking out the show. Maybe we'll do a little bit more of this if we can. We'll do Instagram Live. Maybe we'll do Twitter Live. We'll do Facebook Live and see what type of traction that we get. We'll take a break. I want to talk about the Cam Meredith thing with you. We'll do that next here on The Score. Thank you, Shep. We've been kind of flipping around between Bears conversation tonight, Bulls conversation, and Cubs conversation. We will continue to do that in the 90 minutes of show that we have left. I should remind you that Nick Szczepkowski will be on at 10 o'clock, so you can get his thoughts on a lot of stuff. If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions that you want answered to cbschicago.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legal advice. I was thinking about the conversation that we had yesterday about Cam Meredith and the Bears not signing Cam Meredith or not matching the offer that was given to him by the New Orleans Saints. And I kept coming back to, what if this was just a clerical error by Ryan Pace? Like, if I told you that Jerry Angelo did this, you would immediately be like, that checks out. That makes sense that he didn't check the box. What if this was a horrible clerical miscalculation by Ryan Pace on this? Hold that thought for a second. Let me add something else to the conversation. I was amazed, absolutely amazed at the feedback that we got on the show last night when this topic came up. And then I started, you know, I was checking out some of the other shows, and they got similar. I was listening to Mully and Hanley this morning, and there was similar feedback this morning on the Cam Meredith thing. Here's my hypothesis. The Cam Meredith story isn't about Cam Meredith. It's about Ryan Pace. And maybe this is just another thing to put on the list of, I'm not sure he knows what he's doing. And maybe that was that the fan reaction was filtered through Cam Meredith, or some people feeling upset about Cam Meredith. But really, it's like, again, like, this is something that could have easily been handled and you would have had a quality player. I know that there, I was surprised last night how many Ryan Pace stands there are. There seems to be a lot of them, which I don't quite get.
Mike Glennon is our starting quarterback.
That's part of the reason. I don't quite get it, because he is somehow, maybe is, does he have any history of being a magician? Like, when he was a little kid, did he do magic tricks and stuff? Because he has somehow been able to poof pow divorce himself from John Fox. Like, the record that the Bears had is all John Fox, the 14-34. That's all him. And now that Foxy's out the way, everything's going to be fine. I don't share that sentiment, although I do think that Pace should, and this is speculation, I do think that he should be given credit for identifying Nagy. I think that Nagy's going to be good. I have no evidence to support that, by the way. None. I think that the reaction to this, along with the reaction to Kyle Fuller, has been interesting. I'm perplexed by this. That it seemed like it would have been very easy to... If Ryan Pace is all about letting others set the market, I kind of got a problem with that. And that's being held up as some sort of innovative, genius way to go about paying your roster. Well, you know, he's let the Packers set the market on Kyle Fuller. Mm-hmm. Sure did. He sure did let them set the market on Kyle Fuller. Now, to me, Fuller's contract is not that prohibitive. It's not a big deal. Same thing with the Meredith thing. And I go back to, okay, maybe you're, again, this is me trying to give Pace the benefit of the doubt. Can you really go into camp with three receivers that you can't trust are 100% healthy? But if that's what's on your mind, then why not release them? Why play this game with the restricted free agency deal? If your people are telling you that he's not ready to roll, then what was he doing on your roster? What miracle were you hoping for that would happen? There's a part of me, though, that feels like they thought they were going to slide on by with this. They were like, people saw that he had the ACL and MCL tear. Maybe we can keep him. I don't think that they were expecting multiple teams to be interested in Cam Meredith. And when I saw that he had visited a couple of places, I was like, oh. Because honestly, I wasn't expecting that. Mully said something today that I was walking back from the gym and it made me laugh. He said, isn't it funny that Ryan Pace learned all of his general manager scouting ship from New Orleans and Sean Payton? And Sean Payton is the one that's like, you know who's good? Cam Meredith. And we're going to give him some money to prove it. It was a good point by Mully. You're the Mully and Hanley Show 5 to 9 every morning here on The Score.
One thing I always come to is, like, how do people learn all the minutiae of being a general manager?
There's so much.
And like you were starting the segment off with, maybe he didn't know this. Maybe he didn't know that, hey, I offer him such and such amount of money, and it'll cost me $1 million more than I'm offering now. Maybe I'll get a second-round tender, and there's nobody that's going to give a second-round pick up for Cam Meredith, so we can retain the guy.
Well, you have guys for that. You've got a cap guy.
Cliff Stein, is he there still?
Not in the capacity. There's someone else. I forget his name, but there's someone else that does that for Ryan Pace. I think Cliff's still around, but...
I mean, because, like, his previous job was not this. Is there a person in there that's a GM, that used to be a GM? Ernie Corsi's not here anymore, or not consulting. So is there a person that's like, hey, these are the poison pills. These are the days that you got to remember to do things. Remember, because didn't Denver do the same thing with Elvis Dumervil?
Yes, and they lost him.
Exactly. Like, these are, like you said, maybe a clerical error, maybe a thing that he didn't know necessarily.
Overall, though, Herbie, I don't think that it doesn't change what is already a feeling that Ryan Pace might be overmatched for this job. For me, it goes on the pile of questionable.
His first move, Ray McDonald.
Questionable. And you can put that on someone else. You can say it was Vic's guy. Vic told Pace that everything would be all good. And look what happened. But it seems to be, whenever we talk about Pace, it's always someone else's fault. It's always someone else. The Mike Glennon thing didn't work out because, you know, Mike Glennon. Yeah, but he scouted him and gave him a whole lot of money.
And talked him up big time.
The talking up, I can't 100% let that go, but I can let it, because what are you going to say? But still, the money says a lot. When there were better options for cheaper. To do what they wanted to do last year was let Mitchell get comfortable. Let's not force him out onto the field. Maybe the entire season, maybe the last four or five games he plays. You could have done that with Brian Hoyer. You truly could have accomplished that with Brian Hoyer. Meanwhile, you got dudes sign in for $2 million that had taken teams to the NFC title game. And they gave him 18. But what we heard from the stands, from the Ryan Pace stands, were, well, you know, if Glennon plays good, this could be a real shrewd move for Pace. They could flip him at the trade deadline. Ha! He didn't make it out of September. You saw him on that Monday night game. Was it Thursday night? That Thursday night game against Green Bay. And you're like, oh, this is bad. This is real bad. But it's always someone else. 14-34, that's on John Fox. Not Ryan Pace. Who was last year's free agency class on, though? Questionable.
Was it Marcus Wheaton?
Bad. Now, they corrected that. They corrected that mistake, and they corrected the Glennon mistake by cutting dudes. But still, Glennon and Wheaton last year, $24 million between those two players.
Do they have a pro personnel guy? Like
Bobby DePaul?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to have one of those.
So that would be that guy's fault then.
Oh, I mean, sure.
So, no, it's not. Glennon's not his fault, and neither is Wheaton. No, the pro personnel guy.
Hey, the Glennon thing is all him. Because you heard, I've been looking at Mike Glennon for a long time.
Might as well be Mike Pace.
I didn't mean to make them related. I mean, they'll forever be tethered, but they're not related. I've been looking at his film. We were in the division with him. And I watched his NC State tape. I watched his NC State tape too. And I was like, eh. And so were you. Like, honestly. Like, eh. He's 6'6", though. He's tall.
That was a scouting report 1 week.
Tall.
Man, Mike's really tall.
He's very
tall.
Congratulations
on him from growing himself that tall.
Yeah. Got a lot of balls batted down, too, for a 6'6", dude. I'm supposed to be impressed because he's some new school Jim Druckenmiller? Look it up. 312-644-6767 is the number. Talking Bears with you here on The Score. Coming up after 9 o'clock, I want to run back a conversation I had with Anthony Heron about the Bears and the draft and some things that they need. I also, there's a myth out there that angers me. There's a sports myth that angers me so much, and it is a regional myth that I would like to poke some holes in. And you can share that rant when I go on it with your friends. You'll see when I get there. By the way, if you want to listen to the podcast of the show, which is really just a replay of the show, but stuff that you may have missed, like, it's not new content. I don't want you to think, oh, we did like a post-show podcast, although that's not a terrible idea. But it's on 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show. So if you missed our interview with Jim Deshaies that we had at 7:30, or you missed the interview that we did with Mark Schanowski, which we had at 6:30 today, because I know everyone can't listen all the time, you go to 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show and you're set up. Tomorrow, I'm coming out to Schaumburg. Sam Adams broadcast live at Village Tavern and Grill. If you're out in the Schaumburg area, come on through. Herbie tells me they have excellent chicken fingers. That's what he says.
Tenders.
That's what I say, but we'll see what's on the menu tomorrow. Chicken fingers are for children. But tomorrow, Village Tavern and Grill, I'll be there from 6 until 9. And for all of you MMA junkies, Frank Mir is going to be on the show tomorrow. So you won't want to miss that as he gets ready to fight Fedor. This segment being brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep. One awesome night's sleep? Try a new Tomorrow hybrid mattress designed by sleep experts at Serta Simmons. Use code DRIVE2 for $200 off when you spend $500 or more. Let's go out to Glenview and talk with Tom. Hey, Tom, you're on The Score.
Hey, Lawrence, how's it going?
Things are good, man. What's on your mind?
Yeah, just a little late listening in on your conversation about Pace and Cam Meredith. And the best couple tidbits I had to offer on whether or not he knows what he's doing. He valued Cam Meredith enough going into the 2017 season to basically make him his number one, right?
Yep.
So to only be willing to risk $1.9 million on him coming back from an ACL, which just so happens his top free agent signing is also coming back from an ACL.
Yep.
As you guys were quick to point out, doesn't really make any sense when you could have had draft pick compensation tied to it for $1 million. And who's you just mentioned that Molly brought this up. I didn't hear it this morning, but kind of got ahead of my call. Who's scouting and evaluation department do you trust more these days? The Bears or the Saints? If the Saints are willing to give this guy five and a half guaranteed with a shot at 10, I'm sure they would have given him 2.9 with a risk of a pick if they value him that much coming off his injury.
No, I don't think that they would have done the second round pick, but the idea of a player being worth it for you to keep at $2.9 million, that's a good question. You make a great point about them identifying Cam Meredith and making him their number one receiver. That was after they got rid of their number one receiver. Remember? So that's two number one receivers, at least in your mind. I don't think Cam Meredith is anyone's number one receiver outside of the Bears. But if you had identified a guy who was at the top of your depth chart to replace a guy that was at the top of your depth chart, and now you have neither one of those guys. By the way, the first guy that you got rid of, pretty important to a Super Bowl winning team. Pretty important in the Super Bowl itself. Stayed healthy, got his money, and got a ring. Does that count as a failure of scouting by Ryan Pace? Let's put that over on the pile and say, perhaps that wasn't the best move. And again, remember what happened. We're gonna let, you know, everyone else kind of set the market on Alshon. And then maybe he'll come back. Nope. I'm out. Deuces. And we laughed. Alshon only got a 1-year deal. Ha, ha, ha. Alshon kept himself healthy and won a Super Bowl. Just things to keep in mind. I'm not here to make up your mind for you. I'm just here to present the evidence.
The texter brings up a point that Jeffries didn't want to be here.
Right.
But
hey, guess who was right about that? Had you offered him enough money, I feel like you could have made him stay.
Or just franchise tag him again. He couldn't go anywhere.
Could have done that. But you thought he'd come back. Nope. I'm going to go do this. So now that's two wide receivers that they've looked at and been like, nah, we're good at the position. Oh, yeah? In their defense, with Meredith, it's ACL and MCL, and with Robinson, it's just ACL. But you did give him a whole lot of money. And if we're going to say about this Cam Meredith situation that the Bears know all the medicals, they've got to know all the medicals. That's why they're doing this. Then would it not be fair to then offer up, didn't Jacksonville know all the medicals on Allen Robinson? Just saying.
The contract they signed Marcus Wheaton for is like 2 years, about $9 million.
It was 2 years, $11 million.
So it's about the same that New Orleans Saints offered to Cam Meredith.
Yeah.
So you don't think that...
You gave a potential number three or four receiver $11 million, but the guy that you had identified just a year ago as your number one that you would suspect could end up being your number two, now that you have a number one, not worth it. Not even worth the $3 million. Like, that's the thing that kills me. If you really wanted him, you make it the $2.9 million with the second round tender, knowing that no one's going to play that game, and you still have your guy at an affordable rate. But you were like, nah, we'll let the market dictate. And the market was like $10 million. And you were like, ooh, that's too much.
Watch him get like 80 catches with Drew Brees.
He'll be the number three in that system if he's healthy. I am predicting Cam Meredith will have 8 touchdowns and about 800 yards this year. Maybe a little bit more than that.
They have so many weapons.
Exactly.
Kamara, they're one bad play away from going to the title game.
Exactly. That's a high-powered offense with a quarterback who's going to throw for 4,500 yards. And Cam Meredith is going to have a lot of opportunities. We'll see how it goes for him. I'm just saying that you can't have it both ways. You can't tell me that the Bears knew everything about Cam Meredith's knee and they didn't want him. But then be like, yay, Allen Robinson, yay! Back after this on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.